Welcome to the Exit Coach Radio Show, the show for baby boomer business owners who are looking for cutting-edge information as they plan their 3 to 10 year business succession and exit. Every week, we interview top professional advisors for their best tips, strategies, and precautions so you can be well-planned. And don't miss our one-minute Exit Coach tip of the day on ExitCoachRadio.com. And now, here's your host, the Exit Coach, Bill Black.
This segment of the show is brought to you by the Values Institute and features Mark Goldstein of SoCal IP Law Group from Westlake Village. Mark, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon.
Thanks for joining us today. We're going to talk about intellectual property as an asset to increase the return when you're selling your company, which is, of course, important to all of us. But before we get into that, I'd like to ask you a little bit about your professional background.
All right. Well, I'm an attorney at SoCal IP Law Group, and I like to tell people that I practice computer law. That all started when I graduated from my undergraduate and have a BA in computer science. And then I came out here a little while ago and went to USC and got a master's in computer science. In the course of all that, I worked at a division of Motorola and then a division of Xerox, then eventually went to law school. And for the last 15 plus years, I've been practicing intellectual property law that includes patents, copyrights, and trademarks, and primarily in the computer area. So anything regarding software, data communications, telecommunications, multimedia things, anything you can think about that can be protected with a patent, copyright, or trademark I've been working on.
So anybody that has anything to do with intellectual property, and that starts with just your brand and trade name, right, and works your way on up, do you work with all kinds, types and sizes of companies, or do you have a special niche that you like to work in?
We work with anybody who has any asset that they want to protect. We like to talk about assets because they do add value to the company. And on the front side, you know, whenever the company, anybody starting a company, so we get involved with startups all the time. I volunteer as a mentor with Startup Weekend. I work with the new venture competition at UCSB. And we get companies from the ground up and help them protect their names with trademarks. And if they have any neat concepts or neat physical devices, we'll protect those with patents. But we also work with mid-sized companies and establish patent portfolios where we're talking about, you know, handfuls to dozens of patents or handfuls to dozens of trademarks, and then independent companies as well. They don't have to actually be tied to technology. That would be just a trademark kind of portfolio. But other companies where they're tying both the patents and trademarks together for protecting a particular kind of product.
Okay, so to start with, like you said, anybody that comes up with, let's say, a logo. You come up with a logo, you got an idea for your company, do they come to you then?
Yes, definitely. Actually, and before you print your new mugs, before you print your new pens, and before you buy your domain name and start splashing that logo around, you want to make sure that before you step out on the street, you don't get hit by a bus. That's called trademark clearance. Are the waters ahead clear to proceed? Am I going to be sued if I use this name or a logo?
And is that a complicated process?
No, it's relatively straightforward. Now everybody worth anything is on the internet, right? Mm-hmm. So we just do an internet search, and we also search the database at the U.S. Trademark Office. It gets complicated, though, because the average person thinks, hey, I can just search. If no one's using my name, that exact name, it's okay. So my name is Mark, M-A-R-K. Well, if someone else has M-A-C-H, Mock. Well, if you're from Boston, like I'm from, you say Mock. It's Mock. It's the same thing, M-A-R-K, M-A-C-H, right? So if M-A-C-H is used on a new type of cell phone something and someone else is M-A-R-K, it's pronounced the same way. That could block you from actually using that name, even though it's not the same spelling. So it gets complicated.
It does get complicated, and there's a lot of problems that can happen if you find out later down the road that you've been using the wrong. There's a lot of unwinding that has to be done. It can get expensive, right?
Right. Well, on the first side, back to the, you know, you have your mugs printed and your pens printed. You have to throw them all out.
Yep.
So that's on the easy way. The harder situation is if you do have a domain name, if you're a certain size, the other owner may not know who you are. But once you get big enough and get a little more established, you actually have something to lose. You have, more importantly, your client base and your customer base that you've developed, and you have to change the name from being, you know, Mark Inc. to being Steven Inc. or whatever the new name is going to be. And that's just a whole lot of money and branding and goodwill that you're going to be tossing to the side and having to make sure you rechannel that so you keep your customer base and keep people interested in your product and your company.
Okay, so from the beginning point, it's about protection, but down the road, now, a lot of times companies sell as asset sales, and people say, well, I've got, I don't know, I've got a great client base here. I've got some ideas or structures, and they can go a lot of different ways as far as ownership of those assets as well, right?
Right, yeah. The how it's structured and who owns it, I leave that up to the business attorney. But what gets funny, though, and we come in oftentimes in this situation, you know, you start up and you're a California LLC, and then you get a little bit bigger, and then you're a California corporation, and then you're even bigger, and you become a Delaware corporation, right? So one-third of your intellectual property is owned by the LLC that no longer exists. One-third of your IP is owned by the California corporation that no longer exists. And now you hire me, then you've been a corporation now in Delaware for a couple of years. And I have to make this all make sense so that you can actually get this stuff together and then sell it to the potential suitor so they can have a clean bill of title when they get, clean chain of title when they get all these assets from you.
So, okay, for the small business owner, he's thinking, okay, I have big plans. I'm going to do all this stuff, and then I'm going to grow and all this stuff. And, of course, they're stacking on different patents and ideas and trademarks and all this kind of stuff. But would they be wise first to come to you, it sounds like, and let's map this out. Let's look 5 years down the road and figure out what are all our dreams and goals so that we can figure out our structure, like you said, so they don't get into something they have to unwind and throw away and all that kind of
stuff.
Right,
yeah. First things first is before you ever release a new product or come out with a new service or product and any sort of offering with a new name, you have to make sure that, again, back like I said before, you're not getting hit by the bus as soon as you go to cross the street. So you check with your IP attorney. You give us a call at SoCal IP, and we can do a patent clearance search to make sure no one else has a similar product out there. We can do a trademark clearance search to make sure no one is using a similar name on a similar product, and give you a yellow light, red light, green light. I mean, should you proceed? Should you proceed with caution? What can you expect if you use this name or start selling this particular product?
How long does it take these days to get clearance on a trademark, for instance?
Trademark clearance is pretty quick. It really depends on how busy we are and if we can actually get to it that day or within a day or three, let's say.
Is the holdup, though, that the government has to come back or somehow, or is it once it's filed?
I see what you're asking. So as far as getting the green light as whether you can use the mark from the trademark office, once you file your trademark application, it sits there. And in about 3 months, you'll hear whether the trademark office thinks you're okay or not. And then it may bounce around a little bit, and hopefully we can make some arguments and get it through to allowance if we did our right diligence on the front end. So you'll get actually a trademark registration in hand in about 8 to 12 months.
And a lot of business owners, of course, especially small entrepreneurs, don't want to wait that long. Are they okay to operate under it until they hear, or is that something that you can kind of pave the way early on?
Yes. That's why they call us early, and we do our own clearance search first. And also, if you know you're coming out with a product first of all, if you're developing technology something, right, it's usually going to take 3 to 6 months at least, maybe 6 to 18 months to develop. You should have your name cleared well before the release date so that by the time the product actually comes out, you may already have your registration in hand.
I see. Okay. And how much does it cost these days to file a patent or trademark or not just your law firm, but I mean the fees? I mean, is it expensive to, I have an idea, do I bother to trademark it? How much is it going to cost me?
Okay, the trademark's going to protect your name, and the trademarks are not so expensive. The U.S. trademark office fees are either $275 or $325 on the front end, and there's really not any other costs involved, unless you reserved a name, and then you have to file what's called a statement of use, and that costs a few hundred dollars more in addition. But your total cost of acquisition on a trademark are going to typically be between $2,000 and $5,000, unless you are a bigger company and have a lot of obligations to shareholders, and you may want to do a more extensive written opinion on clearance and availability, then that may double your cost. On the patent side, that's a horse of a different color.
Different color there, yeah.
A lot more expensive. So if you have an invention that you want to protect with a patent, the U.S. Patent Office filing fees are in the thousands of dollars, and your total cost of acquisition is going to be $30,000 to $45,000 over the course of 3 to 5 years.
Okay, we're going to come right back after I get up off the floor here. We're talking with Mark Goldstein of SoCal IP Law Group. We're going to come back and ask you for some stories and some tips and ideas for our listeners. Right after this break, we'll be right back. Olive Crest is a local nonprofit organization dedicated to preventing child abuse, treating and educating at-risk children, and preserving the family one life at a time. For 40 years, Olive Crest has provided safe, loving homes to at-risk youth throughout Southern California, Nevada, and the Pacific Northwest. There are many ways you can help, including volunteering or becoming a foster parent. Go to www.olivecrest.org or call 1-800-550-CHILD to learn more. That's 1-800-550-CHILD. Call today.
At ExitCoachRadio.com, we're interviewing over 100 top advisors to get you one-minute tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new content daily at 6 a.m. and 1 p.m. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute.
Welcome back, friends. Just a reminder that we've interviewed dozens of advisors on a wide variety of topics, and you'll find all of their interviews and highlights online at ExitCoachRadio.com or on iTunes. And I'm talking with Mark Goldstein of SoCal IP Law Group. We're talking all about trademarks and patents and do's and don'ts, shoulds and shouldn'ts. And one of the questions that we hear a lot, Mark, is that, you know, I have a company and I filed a DBA, okay? Is that good enough to protect my name?
No, and if you look at the paperwork, it actually says that right on the paperwork. All that does is says that, you know, I'm holding myself out as doing business under this name. Exactly what it says. Like, I'm Mark Goldstein, but I'm going to be, you know, Mr. Purple, and I'm going to sell whatever great cleaning product there is and call it Mr. Purple, and I'm going to be Mr. Purple. It doesn't mean that I can sell that product in other states. It doesn't mean that I can sell that product nationally. It doesn't mean that I can use that name on that product and call it Mr. Purple. I need to check with my intellectual property attorney. First, do your own internet search. You can actually try to search the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office yourself. But you want to make sure that that name, Mr. Purple, is available to use on that cleaning type of cleaning product out there. Now, what also gets tricky is if you can use the name on one product, can you use it on another product? So where I grew up, there was a place called McDonald's. And guess what? It wasn't a burger place. It was a paint store. And two blocks away, there was McDonald's, the burger joint. Mm-hmm. So it's okay to use the same name on a different product, so long as it doesn't compete with the same consumer or is not typically associated with that same kind of consumer. Now, obviously, if McDonald's was a bakery down the street and you have a burger joint that's famous, that may get a little bit trickier. But mm-hmm. if you have a butcher down the street called McDonald's, that's not going to work.
Okay. So it can get tricky. Right.
Yes.
And people should be forewarned that just because you got a DBA published in a newspaper doesn't mean that you're clear of all the obstacles as you grow.
Right. Especially as you grow.
As you grow. Now, that brings up something that I've heard recently, that there's some kind of trolling going on of people that are looking for obscure or obsolete kind of patents or trademarks out there and trying to commandeer those patents or trademarks or file lawsuits or something like that. What's going on with all that stuff? You must know all that.
Actually, you touched on two things in the same sentence that are completely unrelated. So let's go with the fun one.
I do that a lot.
The fun one first. The one that you have not been hearing about in the news is finding old names and reusing them. And actually, that's a good client story. One of my clients is Rocket Fizz Soda Shops, and they sell their own lines of soda under their own brands. They also sell some old brands of soda. But what companies can do, and I think Target's done this as well, is you find marks that were used in the 30s or 40s that are no longer used anymore, and you can kind of acquire those names and start using them on your own because they haven't been used in a certain significant period of time, so there's enough of a gap. So you can actually get some old names and bring them back to life. And that can be a lot of fun, and you can come out with some either retro products or new products based on the old name. So you can play off people's memories and their fondness for a particular old name and help in your marketing. And
that's interesting.
Yeah.
How do they do the research to find that kind of stuff? Do you get involved there, or is this an internet search kind of thing, or just get an idea?
You get an idea, you remember something fondly from your childhood, and you realize it's not there anymore. And then we check the trademark database to make sure that it was there and it's expired. So, you know, if you know that you're going to be coming out with a new software app for your phone and you want to use a name that's going to maybe attract people who are in a certain age group, and we can search for marks that expired in the 50s that were used in the 40s, and maybe one of them was used on some sort of old TV that's not used anymore, and that could be a neat technology name. Who knows? Now, using the term that you used before was trolling. That's usually associated with patents. And a patent troll is the pejorative for a non-practicing entity, or NPE. You know, in the old days, and still currently, most people who get patents actually make an invention, and they use that invention, and they give it away to society. What I mean by that is, by filing the patent application, they give the neat tricks that are involved in creating that technology to the public, and the public gets that information in exchange for granting the creator a monopoly for a certain period of time. What a troll does is a troll will buy those patents out of bankruptcy of a company, and they won't be that company doesn't really exist anymore, and the product isn't being made anymore, but then they'll go and sue somebody 10 years after the patent issued. One of the bigger cases on that a few years ago had to do with the BlackBerry RIM, or the RIM BlackBerry phones. There was a company that sued them. They came up with this great thing. I think it was a Chicago-based company. They came up with the product, but the hardware wasn't up to speed. It was a great communications device, allowed you to do email and texting and voice all at the same time. It was really great, except that they were ahead of the curve, and the hardware couldn't handle it, and the company went bankrupt. And, you know, maybe one of the people died, I believe, in that situation. And instead of any of the creators actually keeping ownership, everything was sold in a bankruptcy sale. You know, you sell your chairs, your desks, computer monitors, and the patents. And then some holding company gets a hold of the patents, evaluates whether they think the patents are strong enough to assert, and then they start going around the horn. In this case, they really locked in on RIM and sued them. And I think the payout was about $450 million to this non-practicing entity. And all they did was buy a handful of patents for, let's say, $50,000 out of bankruptcy somewhere.
Wow.
So that's what trolling typically is. The question is really, what is a troll, though, and do you have to practice your invention? And the rules now are that you don't have to practice your invention to assert your invention as a patent.
Okay, so we've got about 2 minutes left. So what we're going to talk about is how do people use their intellectual property to increase the value of their business when they're selling a company in 2 minutes?
All right, quite simply, you as a business owner, you have proprietary things that you've created. Whether it's something as simple as, this is my customer list, that would be a trade secret. This is how I make my special products, that could be a trade secret as well. But then, during the lifetime of your company, you may be actually selling products and offering services. And if there's handouts you're making, those are protected by copyright. There's a logo that's protected by copyright and trademark. If there's neat technological things, a neat device, a neat widget, a neat gadget, neat software, specialized software, that can be protected by copyright and protected by patent as well. And you want to make sure during the lifetime of that company, you file registrations on each of the IP items there that are available. Because when you go in and sell your company, you're not just going to sell, you know, again, back to the computers, computer monitors, the chairs, the desk. You're not just going to sell those hard assets. You're actually going to sell your intellectual property assets. And you're going to sell, obviously, the goodwill that you've created and all your customers and all that to whoever the acquirer is. But to increase the value, increase the return, and to provide for your retirement, you should be getting your intellectual property in order well in advance of that. So when you sunset, you can sell and get a lot more in the sale in the form of more money.
So don't ignore your intellectual property. Call Mark Goldstein. How do they reach you, Mark?
They can reach me at SoCalIP.com, and that's probably the easiest way.
SoCal, SoCalIP.com.
Right, SoCal for Southern California, IP for intellectual property. We have offices here in Orange County and primarily in Westlake Village, and also an office in Santa Barbara.
So they can go on there, find some information about your company and maybe some... any white papers or anything like that on there?
Yeah, there's some really good FAQs there. It gives you the basic steps that are taken. First of all, what can be protected by each of the primary kinds of intellectual property, the cost of each, and also where to get more information.
Excellent. I've been talking with Mark Goldstein of SoCal IP Law Group. We've learned a ton in a very short period of time. I hope you come back join us again some other time. And we're going to take a short break, so please stay tuned.
Thanks.
At ExitCoachRadio.com, we're interviewing over 100 top advisors to get you one-minute tips, ideas, and precautions so you can be well-planned. We upload new content daily at 6 a.m. and 1 p.m. ExitCoachRadio.com. Come listen for a minute. Thank you for listening to Exit Coach Radio.